It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
You're wearing pink? Okay, here we go with the...
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith with... It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks, as always, for making your way here, checking out the series. I do hope you hit that subscribe button, of course. I do three new interviews every single week. It's a new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So it's a great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover the new ones at all usual spots, including Spotify, Apple Podcast, at NPR, WFPK.org, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from, you can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Recent episodes have included guests like Madison Beer and Fozia, both talking about their new music. We've had Matthias Schweighofer and Tom Harper to talk about the new Gal Gadot movie, Heart of Stone. Bethany Cosentino of Best Coast stopped by. We had Keanu Reeves and his band Dogstar, the cast of Minx with Elizabeth Perkins, Ellie Kemper of The Office and Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, Emily Kinney of The Walking Dead, as well as Bruno Major, Janelle Monáe, Greta Van Fleet, Ian Hunter, Lucinda Williams, Nick Haxum of 311. Those are just some of the recent guests that we've had here on the Kyle Meredith With podcast and what you get when you subscribe. I'm Kyle Meredith. Today, my guests are filmmakers Jewel Taylor and Tony Rentenmeyer. We're going to be talking about the Netflix film They Clone Tyrone. Came out just a few weeks ago. It's a movie that follows three friends as they discover and ultimately uncover an underground government cloning operation running experiments in the midst of their own town. And it stars Jamie Foxx, Teyonah Parris, and John Boyega. So going to be talking about Jewel and Tony, who co-wrote the movie together with Jewel directing. So we'll get to hear about, well, the feelings they had of helming their first major picture and the fun of world building and coming up with the small and specific character traits of the Trone, as well as watching fans make their own arts after watching it. They're also going to talk about the underlying messages of the story, from conspiracies and capers. We'll dig into the music of the film, calling back to 70s and 80s funk and pop and R&B. And if you've seen it, how they got Erykah Badu to re-record one of her classic tracks. All that and more as we're talking They Clone Tyrone. It's Kyle Meredith with Jewel Taylor and Tony Rentenmeyer.
Hey, what up, guys?
How you doing?
It is a pleasure to meet you both. And They Clone Tyrone, I know you're getting lots of compliments. And let me just be one more on the pile that this is one of the coolest, funniest, weirdest, best movie I've seen lately. And I mean that seriously. Like I didn't read a lot about what I was seeing as I was going into it. Me and my wife watching it, and it ends up just being like, what? So many times. So just first off, congratulations. Like, I love what you guys have done.
I think weirdest is the best compliment in that list in terms of what we want to do and stuff.
Well, there's a lot that goes into it, and I do want to hit on some of the weird parts too. But for this to be your all's, I mean, you've worked in movies, you've got, you know, your filmography behind you, but this is the first big thing right here. This is the first big thing that you know you're putting your names on. What's the confidence level going into a moment like this?
You mean pre making it? You know what I mean?
like, hey, here's the keys to the kingdom. Now you've got it. Now what?
You're on the precipice of day one of shooting, and you're like, uh-oh. You know? honestly, I think we feel like we were confident, but you know, there's always, you know, we talked about this a few times. You know, there's always a pervasive sense of imposter syndrome and anxiety that's inescapable in a lot of ways, you know, especially like the closer you get to the first day of shooting and Jamie Foxx is in the first scene and you have no idea like what it's going to be like to work with Jamie Foxx. So, you know, I think we try not to leave it to chance, to put it like that. So we had backup plans for backup plans. And, you know, I think, you know, we sat down and blocked out that first day three, four different ways, just in case they're not rocking with this. We're going to shoot it like this. If you're not like that, it's okay. It's okay. We'll start the scene over here, you know. And then, you know, I think we got a lot of confidence from how just approachable the actors were, you know. I think it's the fact that, like, John, Jamie, and Tiana were so, you know, gracious. Because I tell people all the time, I would not have taken the role if I was an actor. You know, if the shoe was reversed, I would not put my faith in some random dudes from USC who, you know, you've never heard of. I would not have. You know what I'm saying? So we are eternally grateful that they responded to the material the way they did. And you know, I think they gave us, you know, the confidence just to stick with the idea, you know what I mean? Stick with the vision, you know, while we were shooting, really, because, you know, they were so game to kind of go wherever.
Tony, do you guys, since you've been working together so long, is it down to like a shorthand? What's the operating relationship at this point?
Yeah, it is, honestly. I don't notice it when we're working together, but if ever we were talking to someone else, There's a little bit more like leg room that needs to go into like explaining the idea to someone else versus us two, you know? I mean, I think it's also, it's not like we're always in sync, you know, with how we think a story or a scene should go or anything, but I think we argue a lot about how, you know, argue about like details of stories or scripts, like, and sometimes about like things that are truly minuscule, you know, but most often, yeah, because what matters to both of us, like those little details, is different. Like I think one of our longest arguments on Tyrone was about like the time of day, like how many hours characters spent underground, and like if they come up and it's night, if it's weird, like some small thing like that. But we've done it enough that like now we trust each other so much that like if we're arguing about something, we'll lean into the argument because we know that like if we argue about it enough, there'll be like a third option that's better than either of the two that we are fighting for. And I think that's so we're not always like simpatico with what we think we should go, but we have faith that we'll get to a place that's better than what either one of us thought of.
And that takes a lot too, just knowing that if you're in the middle of that you will eventually make it to that moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny here, you know, you talking about coming up with those rules too. How long they spend underground, you know, like you all get that opportunity. You get to build, you get to make up these rules as you go along and to figure that out. And I know that's just part of the job. That's part of the storytelling, but like how much, like I was starting to think like the little things, like do the clones age, you know?
Yeah. We talk about all this stuff.
We talk about things like clone drift, like in terms of like how far they drift from their like Manchurian programming, you know what I mean, in terms of, so you know, trying to plant evidence of, you know, the first Fontaine and evidence of his drift, you know what I mean, and We talk about the ennui that the clones must feel like having.
Even like stupider stuff, like where in the decanting process do the clones get their hair done? You know, like when they're in the tube, should they be all cut up? Or is that like somewhere like when they get out, like all this that it is, and it is like the fun stuff, honestly. Like all that world building, even if it doesn't actually make it directly into the film, it like makes the process fun. You know, sitting in a room for hours on end, just like typing something out.
That's always the fun thing. You get on set, you tell you, a lot of times you'll talk hours about these details, but like production things will decide them for you. We talk so long about like what hairstyles the actors have, I mean the clones have, and then you realize like you're getting background who are willing to be nude in a pod, you know what I mean? Like, and then the time constraints is like some of them just have a hairstyle, like you know, we had decided like natural hair, they'll all have like afros and that, and then like I probably shouldn't say this because now people are gonna point, then people are gonna go find, you know, inconsistencies in the internal logic, but you know, you run into some real life like casting and timing things where you don't have the time to do the people's hair the way we made this lore, and it's like I guess some people are just gonna have hairstyles that we have to hide, you know, with smoke and mirrors. If you look closely enough, you'll see a few clones that come out of the pods who very much have like braids and like, you know, like hairstyles just absolutely not lore accurate at all. Our little bootleg lore that we made, but you know, sometimes you just got to deal with like the production realities. So you know, a lot of times we do obsess over things that, like, when it gets time to make it, it's like you end up conceiving them anyway.
Well, as the world builders yourself, I mean, you can make up those backstories if you needed to. Like, it doesn't matter what we think. Like, if you need to explain it away, you're the creators, you know. We put our trust in you on all of that. And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Jewel Taylor and Tony Rettenmeyer. You know, when you talk about what this movie is, and it's so many different things, one of the things that is and isn't, like, it's not exactly a conspiracy movie because we're in the driver's seat. We're seeing it. You know, a lot of things about when we talk about conspiracy is that's something that somebody's going off on that's probably, you know, fake. But we're seeing all this firsthand. But at the same time, it does play into that. Like, why? What makes conspiracy fun to play with? Because I would think as a filmmaker, that does allow you a lot to move around with, if that's true.
I mean, I think the fun of conspiracy movies is that there's a little bit of bleed over into real life. Like that's, I think, the difference between like a conspiracy movie and a pure mystery movie. There's a we always wanted, like you know, our dream was that there were people on Reddit talking about the movie, you know, or you know, or what the YouTube comments are about. And we're not, you know, like we're not saying that conspiracies presented in Tyrone are true, but they do. They are supposed to mimic, in some sense, like real world conspiracies. And I think that's that crossover between like a movie seeming like it's like tipping its hat to something in the real world is what I think makes conspiracies fun, you know, as opposed to a mystery movie where the whole question is contained within the 2 hours of the runtime of the movie.
Yeah, and hearing you guys talk about even in other interviews, you know, it's like there the movie says a lot, and it says a lot about what's going on in the world and society and race and everything. But I also hear you guys talk it in a way that it's almost like you don't, and correct me if I'm wrong, it almost feels like you don't want to push it too much in that because it's still entertainment. Like, you know, when me and my wife are watching it, you know, of course, Tuskegee comes up in conversation. You know, and that's a real life thing. Like that happens, and that feels like that's part of the underlying influence, if not maybe a direct influence. But I guess when you talk about what the message is, how much of what you all are making with this movie, you wanted a direct message versus here's entertainment, take of it what you will.
I mean, I think the latter is completely what it is. I mean, I'm from Tuskegee, so you know, it's obviously there are going to be, you know, people who associate, you know, syphilis experiments with the movie. It's clearly there if you're looking for it. You know what I'm saying? If you know about that, then obviously you'll see parallels. But I think we went out of our way we really did go out of our way to try to just present it as just like something that just a bootleg Scooby-Doo movie and let the chips fall. You know what I mean? When it comes to how people interpret it, I think the fun is, you know, seeing people just one thing that, you know, I think we believed in philosophically before baking it, but before you make it, it's kind of hard to, it comes in practice. I think like one thing that I think is the funnest thing is really seeing how it, we've never been able to, we thought we would like it, but I think it, you know, our hypothesis was proved correct, but seeing how something mutates when it's given to other people. And I mean, it goes beyond like, you know, just how people theorize and like how people interpret it. That is completely different than when we were working on it, right? Like you'll have your set of this means this, this means this, this means this, but you know that like someone's gonna watch it and think, you know, X doesn't equal, you know, 76, X equals 95, you know what I mean? Like they're gonna have a completely different interpretation for some things. And I think that's one of the funnest parts is seeing like how people interpret it, you know, what people metabolize out of it, what they don't, you know, I mean, I think just seeing how other people interact with the body of work, you know, and seeing like what kind of mutations come, seeing what memes come out of it, you know what I mean? Like seeing like, you know, I was like hoping that somebody would do a painting or something, some kind of art. And sure enough, somebody did. And it was like, oh yes, you know what I mean? And then a dude took the soundtrack and chopped and screwed it yesterday. And it was like, yes, like, you know, people are appropriating it already, you know what I mean? Which I think is super interesting. And I think that works for like the theory crafting and the thematic takeaways, as well as like, you know, people's like making art on top of your art, you know what I mean? And like, I think that's been the funnest thing. So, you know, we didn't set out to prescribe anything to anyone. You know, I mean, it was just things that were bothering me, that conversations that me and Tony had and that we wanted to explore in the movie. And I think, you know, and we definitely have been like pleased to see that like a lot of theories have popped up, you know, that's probably been one of the funnest parts.
We always like looked at it first and foremost as entertainment. And then secondary, like we never saw it as a lesson plan. Like it was more like a tool if people wanted to talk about stuff, but like it wasn't, neither of us wanted to present it like we knew more than anybody watching it. And we had like some great like truth or lesson to like imprint on them.
I'm definitely not sociologist, you know, you know, we're not qualified to talk in a 2-hour movie about anything super deep. You know what I'm saying? We might be talking about things that are deep, but we're not qualified to answer anything. That makes sense. We can make observations. I think that's about as far as we take it.
The conversations are fun afterwards, though. And again, you know, we're sitting around watching it, and my wife, who's usually much smarter than me, as you'll find out as I keep quoting her, she looks, she turns over, she goes, it really makes you think about the simulation theory. And then, you know, of course, we're talking about aliens and everything else that's around at the time, you know, and and I started thinking of movies like Dark City and The 13th Floor.
That's great. This is all the stuff we hoped would happen, because that even goes like simulation stuff goes even outside of even the box that like Tyrone presents itself in, you know. So, yeah, I mean, that stuff's like music to our ears, you know.
I got to bring up music, of course, too, since you said the word there, because, well, we got 80s R&B and funk. What? Let's see here. I know I clocked Michael Jackson. I think there's some Bootsy Collins in there. And I'm not even getting to the one at the end yet with Erica. And maybe it was one of you that said it, Jill, maybe it was you that said you tend to think in song.
Oh, yeah,
when you
yeah.
think, like, what were you talking about there?
It's not so much that I think in music, like, you know, I'm like singing the words necessarily. It's more that like I think in music when I'm ideating, a lot of times I'll have a feeling and a mood or a tone, and it'll be a song that like encapsulates it, right? And you'll be trying to replicate how a certain song makes you feel. And this goes with almost anything, like, you know, any script that we work on. You know, it's always a feeling that I get from music primarily that filters to film, you know, and so I'll be feeling a sense of melancholy from listening to James Blake. I'll be listening to Retrograde and feeling very melancholic, and all of a sudden melancholic ideas start to come out, and then suddenly you're writing a love story, you know what I mean, like, it's, that's very reductive, but you know, representation of the process, but I mean kind of what it is in simple terms, you know. I think I'll have like, you know, feelings from songs, and then just images will start like popping in my head. So then it's like a matter of trying to deconstruct like what that means, you know. And then we talk about it a lot, and we find songs, and you know, eventually it starts to make some semblance of sense after a while. But it's always like, for me, like, how am I feeling when I hear something? Because I get like very intense feelings when I listen to different things, you know what I'm saying? So I want to feel that when I'm watching stuff, you know. Like, my favorite movie moments a lot of the time are like when the music and the score or a needle drop, and like, it just, when it synergizes and like you get that endorphin burst in the back of your neck, like, that's the kind of stuff, you know. Or if you're watching like some shonen anime, you know what I mean, like where you know they really like just hit you in the feels with the score writers, you know. Yeah, there's a lot of examples that you can give, you know, in the shonen world. But you know, I think that's really kind of where it comes from. Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of nerdy things, but probably the nerdiest thing is that I collect soundtracks. I just have a wall of soundtracks and scores, and you know
Tyrone soundtrack on the wall. You know,
I need the soundtrack. Is there a physical copy of that?
We're trying to get a vinyl. You know what I'm saying? Netflix, what's up? You know, somebody needs to.
I've got the Stranger Things vinyls. I know they could do it.
Someone needs to do it, but you know.
I feel like they should make like an 8-track or something. That would be really cool.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Jewel Taylor and Tony Rettenmeyer.
Musically speaking, obviously we're in a period in this movie. And there's a little things like, you know, I don't know what you call the film or the filter, you know, that the look of the film anyway, even down to, you know, when Tyrone's going through the house and he gets to the break room and there's that clock on the wall. I'm like, yeah, it's the clock on the wall from the 70s and 80s. That's my school clock. You know, so I mean, how did you end up in this specific period? Like, why did you all pick this specific period for the look, for the music? And maybe not necessarily the time, though.
Yeah, I mean, there was always this idea of being able, of making the Glen like out of space and out of time. And like for that, like a big inspiration was stuff like Napoleon Dynamite or It Follows, where there seems to be these anachronism in this otherwise modern world. And it creates this like, just a little bit of like universality to it. You know, the idea that this could be happening anywhere and at any time. I think the way Dwell's described it good is that, like, you know, there are, or it's like the cognitive dissonance that comes with like seeing a building that used to be a Pizza Hut and is now like, you know, a vet store or something. You know, it's this like, you know what it is, but now it's something different. And it's like, it's neither one nor the other. And I think that like little bit of disassociation or something, just, we wanted that in the tone of the movie. Partially for a world building and partially just for a stylistic reason.
It's fun. It is fun. It just, I don't know, it feels weird. As we talk about the weird, it just feels weird in the best way, you know, how it all kind of comes like that. Before I forget to ask, because I brought it up a minute ago, but we do end with Erykah Badu, and it's not just Tyrone, it's a new version of Tyrone. How did you all get that to happen?
A lot of people don't notice that too.
And I'm still wondering how we got that. You know, they set up a meeting with Erykah when we were in pre-production. So this was maybe like fall 2020, something like that. And it was like a Zoom meeting, and we were expecting to like do the whole pitch. Like, cause we actually pitched the movie without a script, but we pitched Erykah Badu doing the last song. Before, so we always joked that like she was doing the song, she was there before the script was there, you know. That's how we like to think about it, you know. The second we was like, all right, we're really gonna call it They Clone Tyrone, because that was the joke title for a long time. The second we decided to like really call it They Clone Tyrone, it's like, well, the next decision made is like, obviously Erykah Badu has to remake Tyrone for us in some kind of way. And we had the Zoom meeting with Erica, and we get like 2 minutes in, and she was like, "I'm in, I'm doing it." And it was like, "What?" Like, you know, like I was trying to explain that we wanted the Bernstein Bears it, but she took the words out of my mouth literally. You know, like, imagine an alternate route. You want me to Bernstein Bears it? I'm like, Erica, I knew this was you. I knew, yeah, she knew right away. And then the first like snippet that she sent me was literally like, because I was like, "Oh, we want the live version of the song." She's like, "Okay, I'm gonna have to rebuild it, but I think I got you. I got you." So she remade it from scratch, because like she doesn't have any stems for a live recording. But the live recording is the one most people the song for, not the album version. So it's like you really need that live re recording for it to feel like it's the one that we know the best. And she totally just from the first meeting, she was like all the way in and really just. I saw Erica, she just went off and did it and just brought it back and was like, "That's exactly what I was talking about."
That's amazing. And it's amazing too that you got the live, because I noticed that at the beginning, because she does the ladies, where you at, fellas, and you're thinking like, of course, Tyrone. And then you hear those first words and you're like, wait a second.
And call and response at the beginning, you know, the whole thing. I mean, that's what, like, she got every detail. She recreated every detail in, like, 2022, even though, you know, the song is 20 years old, you know what I'm saying? More than 20, 25 years old, you know, but she recreated all of these live. The crowd is recreated, the call and response, you know what I'm saying? It's like she remade it all and EQ'd it in such a way that it sounds so close to the original version. You really have to listen to them side by side to like notice the differences.
That's incredible. I congratulated you on the movie, but congrats on that.
That's what we really take pride in. It's like we got Erykah Badu to like make Tyrone again. That's really the biggest swing that we took. Oh, but we got Erykah to do something like amazing.
And I mean, like Jules, like beyond just getting like convincing Erykah to redo the song and stuff, like Jules more involved in the music of this. He's modest about it, but like obviously, like all directors are involved in the music, but Jewel is like very intimately involved in it, and to the extent of like going in the studio and being with our composer Desmond Murray, who he used to make, who was a childhood friend that they made music since they were kids together. So yeah, I mean, he's like historically very modest about it, and I do think it's one of the best parts of the film, you know, so.
Well, seriously, and just another reason why we need a physical soundtrack too, so that exists. And those are fun. I mean, you get into play. I don't know if you call that an Easter egg, but it's sort of like an Easter egg, if because you got to pay attention, you got to find it, and hearing, just knowing those moments are everywhere. We also, at the end of it, I was like Googling Olympia Black, going, is this a real person? It's like it is. It's taking everything further, outside of the movie. It's exactly what I think you guys have been talking about this whole time. It's I haven't had that experience in a long time.
We wanted to plant enough Easter eggs that people were rewarded going down those like rabbit holes, those Wikipedia rabbit holes and stuff.
I hope you guys continue to do that. I mean, surely, hopefully, you're talking about the next projects. And this is, if this is what I can expect from you all as a team, thank fucking God somebody is doing it.
The perfect world, we'll be able to, in the future, make more original stuff.
Well, I hope so. It's one of my favorite movies I've seen in a long time. So, guys, thank you for what you're doing. Thank you for taking the time to talk about it.
Ooh, thank you, man.
And my thanks to Joelle and Tony. They Clone Tyrone on Netflix now. Thanks to you for checking out the episode again. If you enjoyed it, I hope you hit that subscribe button. I'll give you three brand new interviews every single week, just like this one. New one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at all the spots, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. You can grab us at NPR, at WFPK.org, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. And then after that, head over to WFPK.org.
That's where I do a show Monday through Friday starting at 6 p.m. Eastern. You get the best in new music. You get lots of classic tracks. There's music news, bonus interviews. One of my recent episodes had the music of R.E.M., Elastica, The Flaming Lips, Patti Smith, Joni Mitchell, The Raconteurs, Betty Wright, Arrested Development, Pete Townsend, Heartless Bastards, Big Thief, Prince, Gabriels, Lizzo, The Last Dinner Party, Mitski, Pearl Jam, Jimmy Eat World, Astro Gilberto, Lana Del Rey, Charles Bradley, Hole, Queens of the Stone Age, Cyndi Lauper, De La Soul, Fishbone, and a whole lot more. That's just an example of what you get every weeknight at 6 p.m. when you tune in at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media spots. The address is always the same, at Kyle Meredith. So I do hope you like and follow along. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith, and I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
I feel like somebody's going to make a coffee table book about like backgrounds during the Zoom COVID era.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.